Hello, there's a shocker. Frankly, he had more grounds to report the strange white woman accosting students in the corner deli. I didn't realize his presence had any kind of significance, let alone that he might be Livia Somdi's long-lost brother. For that matter, I didn't know about Livia Somdi. But he definitely knew I was there. I hesitate. I might have seen him a second time as well. Where? Outside the Somdi house? When I was being shot at. Are you fucking kidding me? I wasn't exactly paying attention to the scenery. I was hightailing it down a sidewalk trying to save my sorry ass. But for a moment, out of the corner of my eye, I thought I saw him across the street. In other words, where the shot was fired from. Lotham sounds beyond pissed off. I'm not exactly sure why, given I was the one who'd been the target. It's possible, I allow. I'm gonna send Tex back to the scene, have uniforms perform a fresh canvas. Nobody's gonna say a thing, especially if it's some mysterious, scary older brother. Lotham shakes his head. His mouth is set in a grim line. You're here tonight? He gestures at Stoney's. Till midnight. I don't want you out by yourself. You need to attend a meeting, call me. If I can't come, I'll send a patrol car.
To drive me to AA? Wow, talk about making a statement.
Frankie. But I've had enough. There's only so much of this kind of male fretting I can take. I have been on my own for a long time, and I'm not an idiot. I'm gonna go to work, I inform him. Then, given the day, I'll probably retreat upstairs to my studio apartment and incredibly hostile roommate. Forget a guard dog. I dare any evildoer to take on Piper. That cat bites first, asks questions later.
Call me when you're done with work,
Lotham orders. You call me. Now I am being a bitch, but I don't care.
If that's what you prefer.
And what will you be doing this evening?
Running down financial accounts for Tamara Levesque and a family tree for Livia Somdi.
Do you think you might need an attack cat?
I'm a police detective, for the love of God.
And I'm a woman who's lived in more scary neighborhoods than you'll ever get to visit. We both have our skills.
Frankie.
Lotham, I wish I understood you. Detectives like puzzles, which means the moment you figure me out,
I'm not as shallow as you seem to think.
And I'm not so complicated. I'm here to find a missing teen, which is now two missing teens. This is what I do. I am experienced, and I have handled situations like this before. These kinds of cases? I shrug. They always involve secrets, and there's generally at least one person willing to kill to keep those secrets safe.
Do you carry a gun?
I have a whistle, a very loud whistle. Though, if it helps, Stoney has a baseball bat behind the bar.
Take it upstairs with you tonight.
Fine. I glance at my watch. 3:30. I gotta go. I pop open the door, climb out onto the sidewalk.
Frankie.
Lotham calls from the driver's seat.
Be careful, okay? Just be careful.
Back at ya. I shut the car door and head to work. Chapter 28. Stoney is not happy with my late arrival. Sorry, 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 I say. He gives me a look. The look. No one likes that look. I don't provide an explanation or an excuse. I already know it doesn't matter. Instead, I do the best damage control I can. I get to work, and I work fast. 30 minutes later, when the front doors open and the first wave of locals arrive, I'm already pouring spicy cocktail peanuts and pulling beers. Today, I get a few nods in recognition. No words yet, but physical acknowledgement that I'm still here. I'll take it. The night busies up, which is all well and good in my world. I don't want or need the constant buzz of too many thoughts in my head. 9 p.m., the first break arrives.
I head back to the kitchen long enough to request a garden salad from Viv. She looks me up and down.
You're not getting laid.
Sorry. What are you waiting for? No man's gonna be better looking.
Don't tell your husband that.
A snicker.
Enjoy your salad, but live a little too. Life's too damn short. Or haven't you heard?
More food deliveries to various tables, more pitchers of rum punch. Then I get 15 minutes to inhale salad. Love it, I inform Viv. Thank you very much. Have I mentioned that I stole your eggs and fries? Not my eggs and fries. I stole Stoney's eggs and fries. Better work hard then. He's fussy like that. I take that to heart, turning into a whirling dervish of hospitality. Tables served, drinks delivered, smiles extended. I'm like the Wonder Woman of food and beverage. By 11, when things have settled and we're down to the diehards, Stoney says,
Easy now. You're starting to freak me out.
I really am sorry.
You are a piss-poor employee.
Good news, though. I'm not so bad on the missing persons front.
Angelique Badeau is coming home?
Hard ass. Maybe tomorrow. He gives me a look. Maybe, I insist. Then, more thoughtfully. Stoney, you must have seen a bunch of fake IDs in your time.
It comes up.
What did you think?
About what?
The market, quality, etc. He shrugs, gathers up dirty dishes.
Don't have an opinion. Ones I saw, I seized, per the law. Plus, I don't have any interest in serving kids. Then again, you've seen our crowd, not exactly the college type. I don't get the big deal myself. If you can die for your country at 18, why not have a beer?
Victimless crime? He shrugs.
Plenty of bigger things to worry about.
What if it's not all about drinking? I mean, an ID can get you access to all sorts of things.
Like what?
Well, if you're under 18, your own cell phone.
After hours phones,
he states, no prompting required. You know about those?
Everyone knows about those.
I scowl. Then it gets you... I honestly falter. Being 18 or 21, depending on your preference, is worth the right to vote, the honor of joining the military, and, well, access to Boston's nightlife. How many kids you think want a fake ID? I ask him, changing gears.
Plenty. Boston's a college town. Most of the freshmen want a drink or party, and owners like me take carding seriously or risk losing our licenses. You know what it costs to get a liquor license?
A small fortune?
A large fortune. Enough most establishments aren't playing it fast or loose anytime soon.
So there's a decent enough demand for fake IDs. A person could make some cash. Another stony shrug.
If you're into counterfeiting, why not just print money?
Turns out that's really hard.
No shit. Well, what about stocks or bonds or banknotes on one particular ancient neighborhood bar?
I hear what he says. Might be possible. I don't know.
Green card.
Someone speaks up from the end of the bar. One of the regulars, Michael Duarte. I've served him several nights, but this is our first conversation. His accent is definitely not from here, though I'm hard-pressed to pick a country. The fact that he's slightly slurring his words doesn't help.
Gonna fake something, fake a fucking green card. Or work visa. That's what everyone wants.
Michael raises his beer and takes a long pull. Both Stoney and I watch him. You have TPS status? I ask him. As in temporary protected status, which is what most of the Haitian immigrants, such as Angelique and her brother, were granted post-earthquake.
Not me. Plenty of others.
Can you fake a visa? I ask Stoney, genuinely curious, because the drunk guy raises a good point.
Can you fake a passport?
He asks me. Not without a lot of expertise.
There you go.
Harder than a $100 bill? I ask him.
Beyond my pay grade.
He's right, But he's got me thinking about Lotham's point from the car ride home. Even if Angelique and Livia were making thousands a month dealing fake IDs, that's small potatoes compared to illegal drug revenue. Why kidnap two girls over small potatoes? Counterfeiting green cards or work visas would be big leagues, crazy amounts of money. Except if you can't nail a hologram on a Massachusetts driver's license, how the hell are you going to fake a document on par with a U.S. passport? Forging a visa is terrorist cell kind of crazy. Or Russian-printed bills kind of savvy. It feels to me it all boils down to one key question. Angelique and Livia were clearly involved with something illegal. But how illegal? What kind of crime would incentivize kidnapping and holding two teenagers for nearly a year? I mull the possibilities as I wrap up for the night, closing out tabs, carrying the last of the dirty dishes to Viv, cleaning.
"Where's your handsome hunk?"
she asks me as she finally bustles out, pulling on her coat. My phone hasn't rung. I refuse to admit how many times I've checked it.
Working?
Mm-hmm. Been a long day.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, look, there's your husband waiting for you.
Mm-hmm.
Stop that. Finally, a smile. Girl, you gotta get your priorities straight. None of us have forever. You know what I'm talking about? My eggs have petrified in my ovaries? Forget that, honey. I'm talking fun. You hear me? She's not wrong, but it doesn't help my cause as I let her out the front door, then lock up behind. I watch as her husband takes her arm. They look adorable. Two peas in a pod. Viv shoots me a final cheery wave. I do my best not to vomit in her general direction. Stoney closes out the register, brings me my tips. I wave him off. I keep eating out of the kitchen. My bad.
You're both eating my food and showing up late?
What I lack in discipline, I make up for in personality. He gives me a look. Hey, I'm confessing my sins up front, offering you money back. As employees go, that's not too shabby. He seems to accept this. I even clean up after your homicidal cat.
Piper's a good worker. Complains less than you do.
I haven't bitten off anyone's toe lately. He shrugs. Apparently, that's not as impressive a feat as I'd hoped.
You gonna bring that little girl home?
He asks me. I'm feeling reckless. Hell, I'm gonna bring two little girls home. Angelique Badeau and Livia Somdi. He hands over the $50 in tip money, cash I sorely need.
You do that? And we're even.
You love this community, don't you?
It's my home.
I don't have a home, but I still know what you mean. We both finish up our work in silence. Then Stoney exits stage left, and I climb up the stairs to my apartment. I meant what I said to Lotham. Today had been a long day. Best to retire early. Yet I still check my phone. No calls, no messages. I feel restless, thrumming with the edge of unfinished business. What has Lotham learned about Livia Somdi's other brother? Or what about possible bank accounts for Angelique's alter ego, Tamara Levesque? I hate being in the dark. Pacing my tiny apartment back and forth, feeling my restlessness grow, my skin start to tingle, my scalp pull tight. Maybe I should head to a meeting. Nights like this are exactly when I need a meeting. No need for a fucking police escort. I've lived tougher, seen neighborhoods more dangerous. I wasn't lying to Lotham when I said as much earlier. I can do this. I pull back my curtain. I stare at the street outside. That's when I see him. Standing there, directly in a wash of light where I'm certain to spot him. Very tall, lanky build,
red sweatsuit, multiple gold chains. His hair is pulled back from his face in an intricate pattern, revealing a face that is lean, callous, cruel. He stares right at me. I see him. He sees me. I let the curtain drop. I tumble back onto my bed. I think wildly. I need Piper. Where's my attack cat? But when I check under the bed, Piper's gone. I order myself not to panic. I tell myself I'm strong and capable, and I've been in deep shit before. Then I nervously work the lock of my door, easing it open long enough for me to creep downstairs and grab Stoney's bat. As long as I'm there, I check the front door, still secured. Then the side door, also bolted. The side door is unmarked and solid metal. No one is getting through that. The bar's front door, however, smoked glass. It can be shattered. Would probably set off an alarm, but maybe noise doesn't matter. A determined predator on the hunt. In, out, done. I recheck the locks, then head upstairs, holding the bat stiffly before me. Once in my apartment, I hit the bolt lock. I gingerly move the curtain back. I see Retro Dude still standing on the sidewalk, staring up at me. I should call Lotham. And say what? Livia's evil older brother is watching me? And why haven't I heard from Lotham anyway? Surely Boston's finest has learned something by now, so why the radio silence? 1 a.m., 2 a.m. I sit on the bed facing the door, bat across my knees, phone within easy reach. I doze off, dreams of blood and Paul, and screams so primal they shiver up my spine. I'm chasing Angelique Badeau down a long corridor, never able to catch up. Except then I turn a corner and the tracksuit man is there, pointing a gun. Couldn't leave it alone, he says. He pulls the trigger. Angelique screams and falls to the ground, a bloody hole in her gut. He pulls the trigger again, and now I'm falling to the ground, a bloody hole in my gut. A third booming shot. Paul screams the loudest, blood everywhere, as he collapses beside us. I'm sorry, I gasp. But you killed us. Now they're both angry, and it's all my fault, and so many things I should have done differently, should have done better. I'm falling down, 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 into an abyss of tortured souls and clasping hands and guilty consciences, mostly my own. A cat appears, growling low. She leaps into the fray, slashing out with her claws. I feel pain, startlingly harsh, refreshingly clear, just as I bolt upright, clutching my arm against my chest. My phone is ringing. I spy Piper, now on my bed, twitching her tail crankily as she grooms her right front paw. I glance down at my forearms to discover fresh scratches. I don't have time to consider the matter. 3 a.m., my phone still chiming. I answer it. At long last, I hear Lotham's voice. He says, "We have a body." And just like that, I failed again. Chapter 29. Lotham sits in the rear booth. He's wearing yesterday's snazzy ensemble with his tie loosened and dress shirt wrinkled. He looks gutted. I pour him a cup of hot coffee. When he stares at it blankly, I head to the bar, grab a bottle of rum, and add a shot. Just because I'm an alcoholic doesn't mean other people can't drink. I return the rum, take a seat across from him. I'm still wearing my oversized t-shirt with a pair of men's boxers. They were Paul's once, but we're not here to discuss that. Speak, I order. What happened to your arm? I looked down at the blood-crusted gashes.
Piper.
Did you try to spoon with her or something?
Or something.
Speak. Lotham takes a fortifying gulp of rum-laced coffee. His hand is shaking. I'm not sure he notices till he tries to set the mug down and sloshes coffee over the edge.
Sorry.
I wait. I didn't even know she was missing, he mutters at last. 15-year-old girl. And we didn't even know she was lost till a couple of days ago.
Which is how I learn we're talking about Livia Somdi, not Angelique Badeau.
Where did you find the body?
Franklin Park, dumped behind a tree.
I wince. Harsh.
She was fully clothed, he says.
I get it. There are other options.
Cause of death?
Bruises around the neck, petechial hemorrhages in the eyes.
Strangulation.
Park was the dump site. Forensic gurus will have to perform some magic to see if we can narrow in on place of death. Homeless guy flagged down a patrol car. Poor man was just looking for a place to crash for the night when he found a body instead.
I nod. Lotham keeps talking.
Initial analysis, wherever Livia had been staying, it wasn't on the streets. She was too clean for that. She was dressed simply. Jeans, a Patriots t-shirt, sneakers. None of the items were brand new, but none appeared that old either. She was noticeably thin, her fingernails chewed down to the nubs, her back molars worn from repeated grinding. Definite signs of chronic stress, according to the ME, though not necessarily physical abuse. No bruises, fresh lacerations, healing fractures, that sort of thing. She looked pretty good, all things considered. You know, other than her neck.
Lotham exhaled heavily, chugged more coffee.
Angelique? Homeless man didn't see anyone in the area. We're still reviewing video footage now, but that section of the park is off the beaten path. I'd say whoever dumped her knew what he was doing.
It's such a sad term. Dumping, like trash or unwanted goods, instead of a teenage girl.
Livia's family? I ask. I did the notification myself. Her mother didn't appear surprised at all. Just flat. That parent who's always feared the worst and now doesn't have to be afraid anymore.
I know how it is.
JJ was there.
Johnson, I say. I don't know why, just to get in one last dig.
Of the two, he was the more emotional. Initial response, stricken, followed by pissed off, followed by driving his fist into the wall.
This gives me pause. He didn't suspect his sister was dead?
No. More to the point, he was enraged. Whatever's going on with that family, I would bet my shield Johnson didn't want his sister harmed, if he even knows what happened to her.
You ask about an older brother?
I know my job.
Lotham speaks up sharply. He's had a rough night, so I let it slide. He takes another gulp of spiked coffee.
Fuck,
he says at last. I can't disagree with that, so I say nothing at all.
JJ had already taken off by the time I broached the subject of an older Somdi sibling. I thought being alone would make it easier to talk with Rosalind, but she shut down. If she hadn't kept sucking the life out of each cigarette, I'm not sure I would have believed she was even there. I'll take another run at her later, but given her love of the police.
Lotham isn't asking for me to get involved. As a detective, he would never ask for a civilian to insert herself in an investigation, let alone visit a residence where she's already been shot at. And yet, that's my mental takeaway. Mrs. Somdi doesn't talk to cops, meaning if we want to learn more about Livia's mysterious other brother.
Red baseball cap?
I ask.
Not with the body.
In other words, Angelique is still wearing it.
Something's changed, I murmur. No shit.
Seriously,
Angelique disappeared 11 months ago. Livia, a couple of months after that. But it's only been in the past few weeks that Angelique's resurfaced, sending a coded message for her brother, dropping a fake ID. The girls were clearly being kept alive for some purpose, producing semi-decent fake licenses, I don't know. Though even as I say the words out loud, that sounds like a dubious master plan. What kind of criminal enterprise kidnaps two girls and holds them against their will to manufacture less than brilliant forgeries? I don't get it. For now, I press on. Clearly, things are going downhill. The signs of Livia's acute physical stress, Angelique's frantic overtures. Now, Livia's murder. I think whatever purpose the girls had been serving, time's up. And they both knew it. Know it. My own voice ends shakily. Is Angelique even still alive? Or is it just a matter of time before we find her body? And if she is still breathing, dear God, what must she be going through after everything she did to try to help her friend? Where have these girls been hidden? What the hell has been happening to them for the past year? And why the fuck couldn't we have found Livia in time? Lotham downs half a mug of rum-laced coffee, his grim expression a mirror of my own dark thoughts. Were you able to trace Angelique's alias, Tamara Levesque? I ask at last, trying to marshal some semblance of professionalism. Did it lead to a bank account?
Yes, I was able to trace it. No, it didn't lead to a bank account stuffed with ill-gotten gains. What I did discover? Tamara Levesque is a college student, enrolled in Gleason College to be exact. Seriously? Do I look like a guy with a sense of humor?
I'm this close to fetching more rum, this time for both of us. Instead, I rub my temples furiously. So, Tamara Levesque is Angelique's alter ego, and Angelique used the fake identity to go to college? When will the case make any damn sense? I mutter to no one in particular. Is it a medical school?
Nope. Some small liberal arts college in Western Mass. It'll take some digging to learn more. You know how many colleges exist in Mass?
A lot?
Hundreds.
I nod, as if any of this makes sense. I asked Stoney about fake IDs tonight. He assures me there's a market, but he's not convinced it's on financial par with, say, drug dealing.
He's probably right about that.
And yet, we now have evidence of two girls who may have been involved in producing fakes, and at least one was murdered for it. What would make such forgeries worth killing over, especially considering they weren't even top-quality knockoffs?
I have no idea.
You know what would be priceless and worth killing over? Green cards. Or work visas. A guy at the end of the bar suggested it. You have thousands of immigrants whose temporary status is about to expire. All of them have local roots, and none of them want to go home, making a forged visa worth a small fortune. Lotham, however, is already shaking his head.
Can't be done. Certainly not by two teenagers. Hell, we might as well go back to counterfeiting currency. It'd be about as easy.
Is there something in between? More valuable than a fake license? Not as complicated as a visa?
Off the top of my head?
He pauses, closes his eyes in thought, exhaustion,
something.
Opens them again.
Fake credit cards, I suppose. But that's getting into identity theft, which is a whole different ball of wax. And I don't know why anyone would need to kidnap two girls for that. There are several Russian gangs in Boston who are known for it. They already have recruits roaming the streets, internet cafes with data miners to record financial data straight out of someone's wallet. Later, the data is transferred to a cloned card. For those operations, kidnapping would cause more trouble than it's worth.
I get what he's saying. Unfortunately, it only adds to our confusion. I take it from the top. Angelique and Livia were abducted for a reason. First, Angelique, who was most likely held hostage to force their original target, Livia, to do whatever it was they wanted Livia to do. Most likely, this something involves computer design, 3D printing, parts manufacturing, whatever. But eventually, Livia disappeared too. For the sake of argument, let's assume it was because operations reached a point where they needed her on site or desired more control. So now both girls are under wraps, but alive, fed, clothed, housed. Angelique doesn't dare make a break for it or contact her family over fears they'll hurt Livia, and vice versa. And the girls are working, doing something important because otherwise, why be kept alive at all? Maybe it started with the forged licenses, which showed off Livia's skills, but it must have migrated to something with higher revenue potential to justify holding two kidnapped girls for nearly a year. Not to mention they'd need a space to keep the girls, plus have at least a couple of guys serving as guards while overseeing operations. They wouldn't necessarily require an entire warehouse for computer-generated forgeries, but space is still space. Lotham nods. For 11 months, the girls have been working on this something. It's gotten so intense and stressful. Livia's breaking down, while Angelique's terrified enough to risk making contact and dropping breadcrumbs. Except it's still not enough. Angelique's worst fears come true. Livia is killed. My voice trails off. Meaning, whatever the project is, it's nearing completion. They don't need Livia anymore, or Angelique. Lotham doesn't disagree. Except these are still questions, not answers. Nearly a year later, we're no closer to who, what, or where. Best lead we got is some mythical older brother of Livia's who inspires fear. I saw him again tonight. Who? Our mystery man. He was standing across the street from my apartment. When I pulled back the curtain of my apartment, he stared straight up at me. God damn it! Lotham slams down his coffee mug. You didn't call me? I merely shrug. And say what? He was just standing there. Except, if he was outside my apartment, then he couldn't have been the one killing Livia, could he?
I wouldn't jump to that conclusion. We don't have time of death, meaning he could have very well killed Livia, then come to monitor your actions. Damn it, everything about this case. Damn it, damn it, damn it.
You need some sleep. We both need some sleep.
Because it'll look better in the morning? It is fucking morning, and a girl is dead.
I don't say anything. Just take his hand. I feel his rage, his frustration. I've been there myself 14 times, and it doesn't get any easier to take. Angelique is still alive, I tell him.
Maybe.
She needs us. Whatever's happening, it's all going down fast. We have to figure this out. We will figure this out. But not like this. When's the last time you even closed your eyes? He doesn't answer. By my calculations, it's probably been days, and exhaustion is clearly taking its toll. Come on, I'm taking you upstairs. Grab an hour or two of rest. Then we can review this again, when we're both a little less insane. Lotham glowers, but doesn't resist as I take his hand, lead him upstairs. My own thoughts are churning, a mix of crushing sorrow for a girl I never met and didn't save. A deepening despair over too many questions and not enough answers. A growing dread that the clock is ticking, mercilessly now, and if we don't figure this out, help us, Angelique had written, except we didn't. I make Lotham sit on the edge of the mattress.
He removes his sidearm and gold shield, placing them neatly on the bedside table. He moves on autopilot, his eyelids already lowering, his body collapsing as I divest him of everything but his t-shirt and boxers. His chest is broad and heavily muscled. I do not trace his collarbone with my fingertips. I do not trail my lips along the hollow of his throat. Instead, I lift his legs and tuck him into bed. Good night, detective.
Who's Paul?
I didn't say Paul.
Yes, you did.
Good night, detective.
I put him to bed.
Then I take up watch in front of the window, pulling back the curtain just enough to peer out. But no gold-chained gangster is staring up at me.
I'm going to learn your secrets,
my guest says sleepily. I let the detective sleep. Then I rest my forehead against the cool glass of my window and think of Livia Somdy and Angelique Badeau and what it means to be a teenage girl. The mistakes we all make, the moments we'll never get back again. Then I do say his name, Paul. And I smell blood. And I feel pain, and I let it wash over me, the price of my sins. I'm sorry, I whisper, but I'm not talking to Paul anymore. I'm talking to Livia Somdy and all the girls like her. Then I pray, as hard as I've ever prayed, for Angelique Badeau, for us to find her in time, for her to be out there, still alive, still okay, for her to please, please, please come home again. Chapter 30. I don't sleep. My thoughts are spinning too swiftly. 5 a.m., Lotham tossing restlessly. I give up and tiptoe out of my room. Stoney has an ancient desktop in his office. I fire it to life, hoping it might provide some insights. I brew a fresh pot of coffee as I wait for it to boot up. Then I take a seat and have at it. First, I Google the name Tamara Levesque. It has to mean something, I think. Though, why a college student in Western Mass? But Emmanuel said his sister didn't dream. She made plans. So, what was Angelique trying to tell us? What did we need to know? I get four hits. Three of them are Tamara Levesque's who live in other states. The fourth is a mention on an Instagram page. I have plenty of experience with social media. In this day and age, it's impossible to search for missing persons without following their digital footprints. Now, I log in and look up Tamara Levesque. Immediately, a page for Gleason College loads up. I discover dozens of photos of a college campus surrounded by rolling green hills and old brick buildings. There are pictures of laughing kids sitting outside, more smiling students inside classrooms. It takes me a bit to pick out Tamara. She's pictured in a lab, her face partially obscured by goggles as she handles a flask over a Bunsen burner. Her black hair is pulled back tight, Tamara's image on the license, versus Angelique's heavy ringlets from her missing poster. But it's the same girl. Which leaves me even more confused. Angelique is using her fake ID to enroll in college? That makes no sense at all. So, what did Angelique need me to see here? What's she trying to tell us? Gleason College is listed as a small liberal arts college. It appears to rest at the foothills of the Berkshires, with the address given as some town I've never heard of. It offers online classes as well as a traditional classroom education. I peruse photo after photo of beaming college students, then read a note from the president, a stern-looking white dude in thick black glasses and gray three-piece suit. I didn't know people still wore three-piece suits. I review each photo in detail,
then returned to the collection as a whole. All in all, Gleason College looks just like any other New England university, albeit with a particularly pretty campus. It's not until my fifth or sixth time through that I spot it. In the background, another female student barely visible in the rear of a classroom. Livia Somdi. I'm certain of it. She and Angelique ran away to join a college. No way. I don't believe it for a minute. So what the hell is going on? I sit back, feeling more lost now than before. After another minute, I expand my Google search to Gleason College as a whole. The website, however, mostly seems to repeat the photos from Instagram. I find a page where I can request additional information. I plug in my email, hoping I'll hear back sooner versus later. Then I get up and pace the entire length of the dining room several times. In the end, there's only one thing I can think of to do next. I need to speak with Livia's mom, Rosalind Somdi, presumably without getting shot at again, which is easier said than done. More pacing. Finally, it comes to me. I creep back upstairs and snag my jacket and flip phone. Lotham is snoring away, a soft rumbling sound at odds with the deep scowl etched into his troubled face. I don't think his dreams are happy ones. One more thing we have in common. I return downstairs, where I fumble through my jacket pocket till I find what I'm looking for, the phone list from my first AA meeting, which includes Charlie's number. 6 a.m. is definitely early by most night owl standards. Charlie still picks up almost immediately.
Who's this?
Frankie Elkin. A pause.
You doing okay, Frankie?
I'm not about to take a drink if that's what you're worried about, but I could use some help. I explain to him about the discovery of Livia Somdi's body, coupled with the revelation that she has an older brother.
I don't know the family well enough to know anything about that,
Charlie says. I understand. I want to meet with Rosalind, but last time I went to the house, let's just say I like my head bullet free.
So what do you want from me?
Do you think you could reach out? AA to AA? Maybe get her to meet you somewhere? Say that little diner where you took me? I need to get her on neutral ground.
I don't know if she'd listen.
But you could try. Tell her you have information about her daughter, but for her ears only. Which is true. I do have information for her ears only. Charlie is silent for a long time.
I'll try,
he says at last,
but no promises.
Thank you, Charlie. And just, well, I need to speak to her as soon as possible. Angelique Badeau's life is at stake.
You remember what I said before? Plenty of folks don't like trouble, especially some white woman barging in when she's not welcome and not wanted.
Story of my life, big guy. Pause. Then I say more softly, I want to bring Angelique home. I want to get this right. I need to get this right.
God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change,
Charlie intones. I know.
I'll see what I can do. But my guess is that family doesn't rise before noon, so it'll be a few hours.
Thank you, Charlie. He disconnects. I close up my phone. Noon gives me a solid 5 hours to do something. Next logical line of questioning? I mull the matter over while I climb back up the stairs. I open my door, then halt in my tracks. Lotham's eyes are open and fully alert. He's not moving, though. Possibly because Piper is also awake and now perched on top of the bed, glaring at him.
Help,
he says as I enter my apartment. Is the big bad boxer scared of a little kitty?
Help,
he says again. But I don't move closer. I still have blood on my arm from last night.
I looked up Gleason College. One of the pictures shows Livia Somdy in the background. I'm sure of it.
What?
Lotham is startled enough to twist toward me. Piper immediately growls. He returns to his frozen state. I kind of like this game. And the view's not bad at all. Lotham, in a tight-fitting tank, is one good-looking man. Hang on, I'll find some food to distract her. Be right back.
You're leaving me alone with her?
You have a gun.
I'm not shooting a cat.
Good, because I'm pretty sure she'll pull a Pet Cemetery and come back even scarier. I retreat downstairs, where I find a small container marked Piper in Viv's refrigerator. I dish out a few pieces of something that smells plenty foul and carry it back to my apartment. Piper is still on Lotham watch. Lotham still hasn't moved a muscle. I set the dish on the floor. Minutes pass. Then, with a final twitch of her tail, Piper leaps gracefully from the bed and pads over to the peace offering. She gives me a narrow look, then gulps down the pieces of chicken liver in two bites before retreating once more under the bed. It is now safe to move about the cabin, I inform Lotham. Just don't step too close to the mattress. She likes to go for the heels.
Great.
Lotham sits all the way up, looking discombobulated, though whether that's from his long night, too little sleep, or a homicidal wake-up call, it's hard to be sure.
I gotta go to work,
he says. Makes sense. I move to the end of the mattress, where I manage to climb up with a lunging step designed to avoid raking claws. I cross my legs, eyeing my evening's catch. I like the detective. I think he likes me, but I'm still not sure if I want to tell him about my plans regarding Rosalind Somdy. In my experience, men tend to be overprotective, especially law enforcement types. Then I tend to get cranky, if not downright rebellious. I should learn from my mistakes, but again, one of those things that's easier said than done.
Who's Paul?
Lotham asks. Don't you have a murder to investigate?
I can spare 5 minutes.
Too bad. The story takes at least 30.
Former lover? Boyfriend? Husband?
I've never been married. He nods. That tells him enough.
How long were you together?
9 months. Maybe a year. Depends how you want to count things.
The infamous, we can't even agree on our first date?
Something like that. We met 12 years ago. He helped me get sober the first time around. He believed in me when I needed someone to have more faith and perseverance than I did.
And now?
Turned out normal life wasn't for me. Not to mention he didn't approve of my new hobby. He thought I was being obsessive and self-destructive, substituting one addiction for another. It happens.
He's an alcoholic?
No, just a man with a savior complex.
So he helped you get sober?
I got myself sober, thank you very much.
Touché. But you meet, first him helping, then it becoming more until you get too interested in playing detective.
Are you trying to die this morning?
I had a rough night.
Me too, buddy. You want answers? Ask some honest questions. Lotham is silent for a while. His breathing has accelerated. Mine too.
Where is Paul now?
We parted ways 10 years ago.
Are you still in touch?
I dial his number on occasion.
And he takes your call?
No. His widow does.
Lotham doesn't speak anymore. Neither do I.
I'm sorry,
he says at last. Nothing to do with you.
Still.
Like you said, you have a murder investigation, and I have work to do as well.
Bartending tonight?
Shift starts at 3.
Until then?
Don't worry. I'll do my best not to get shot at or chased by anyone who looks like a mall-walking gangbanger.
A girl has been murdered. Things are getting serious.
I'm aware.
You're a civilian.
Get out of my bed, detective. Shower is that way if you're interested. There's food down the street. As for me, I don't require a babysitter. I have my own life to tend to.
Is it because Paul died?
Lotham asks me, his voice softer, genuinely curious.
And now you can't trust anyone?
I lean forward slightly. Or maybe because I can't trust anyone, Paul died. I climb off the bed, turning my back on the detective and stripping off clothes. He wants to take in the show, that's his problem. I have work to do. I pull on jeans, find a fresh t-shirt, and maybe because the universe has its own sense of humor, the one I grab happens to be a faded red shirt with the stick figure of a happy camper standing in front of an old VW bus and distant mountains. Life is good. Paul gave it to me to celebrate 3 months sober, when we officially inaugurated our burgeoning relationship by going camping. The cotton is worn with age, a soft caress against my skin. I don't look at Lotham. I grab my tennis shoes, head for the door. He doesn't call me back, which is good, as I rat-a-tat down the stairs and into bright daylight. Sun is still shining, the world's still spinning, and Angelique Badeau is still missing. I get to work. Chapter 31. I head to Franklin Park. It would be faster to take a bus, but after the night's adventures, I could use the exercise to settle my churning mind. The park is on the map Charity from Dunkin' Donuts drew for me the other day, a massive green space just beyond the rec center. The rec center is my next stop, but I doubt Frederick will be in till late morning. And maybe it's my mood, or maybe it's another sign of my obsession, but I want to see where Livia's body was found. I agreed with Lotham last night. How terrible to lose a child most of the world never knew was missing. Is that why I do what I do? Because I can't stand the thought of a life not mattering, of a child being forgotten, or a person sinking without leaving behind a single ripple in the universe? I don't know. The vulnerability of Livia Somdi or Angelique Badeau speaks to me. After all, my own ties to this world are delicate at best. Should one of these cases take a wrong turn, that speeding bullet finally catch up with me? I don't know that there would even be a funeral. Maybe I'll just be gone, which is both terrifying and comforting. The walk is longer than I expected, a solid hour up a broad avenue. The weather is mild, the sun having traded in its summer warmth for fall chill. But the exercise refreshes me, helps clear my head, and makes me glad I headed outdoors. I come to the zoo first. It's small but charming, a classic city setup. This early, it's still closed, but I spy a few women with young children prowling the fenced perimeter. No doubt they've been up since the crack of dawn and are already desperate for distraction. I find a path and walk, though given the massive size of the park, wandering around aimlessly is probably not my best strategy. I decide to stick close to the main road that winds through the green space. I've played this game before, and the sad reality is that a human corpse can be carried only so far. Ergo, any body dump is going to be near a major thoroughfare. Sure enough, 15 minutes later, I come across the first police cruiser, parked alongside the road to ward off looky-loos. Deeper into the park, near a copse of trees, I can just make out a sliver of yellow among the leaves. Crime scene tape. I have arrived. I make a left turn, cresting a small rise. From this angle, I can peer down at the secured area. Another uniformed officer is pacing the perimeter, around and around. Poor officer has probably been here most of the night and is now doing his best to stay awake. I can't see much. A few trees, a smattering of thick green bushes. I should have asked Lotham more questions. Was the body found laid out peacefully, hands crossed over chest, or just tossed to the ground? I'm no expert on murder, but I've been around enough investigations to know there's a difference. One being more personal, tinged with regret, colored by remorse. Say, what might happen if a family member had been forced to take dramatic action versus a third party who'd grown impatient with a terrified teen? Livia's nails were chewed down to the nub, Lotham had said, a clear sign of stress. I continue my study, and within minutes, I know what I need to know. There are plenty of other places to dump a body in this city. Dumpsters, back alleys, abandoned buildings. But this placement? Beautiful, serene, private. The kind of person who would bring Livia's body here is the kind of someone who cared. Livia's mysterious older brother? Or perhaps her other brother, drug-dealing JJ? What about Angelique herself? Had she been forced to participate in this atrocity? Again, Control 101. Establish fear and intimidation through death and destruction of the people your subject cares about most. The pieces of this case swirl around me. Two girls with promising futures, at least one scam involving fake IDs, coupled with a second scam involving a scenic university in Western Mass. Except, what did that mean? Because both Livia and Angelique were pictured at the college, yet I didn't believe for a minute they'd run away to join some college under fake names. I stand on the pathway. I can hear birds chirping, feel a soft breeze on my face. It is peaceful. It is beautiful. I gaze down again, where a girl's body was abandoned just last night. Livia Sondi deserved so much better. She deserved being found alive. She deserved growing up, discovering her own unique self. She deserved a life. I feel now, more than ever, the weight of my own failure. So many missing persons cases, and yet none I've brought home alive. I'm sorry, I whisper to Livia Sondi. Then I stand quietly and just be. Weigh the magnitude of my regrets. Resolve to do better, because that's the best any of us can do. Then, 10, 15, 20 minutes later, I head back down the path, keeping away from the police, to the entrance of the park. 10 a.m. I already know where I'm headed next. Hopefully, Frederic will now be at work at the rec center. Only one way to find out. I have to walk all the way around the rec center building again. It's very quiet here, and with the outdoor fields and courts, it reminds me of the hushed beauty of Franklin Park. Is that significant? My mood has gone dark. Even with the sun on my face, I'm thinking of dead girls and personal failures and memories that won't help me now. Focus. I round the giant metal structure, finding the back doors unlocked and stepping gratefully inside. Once more, the space is hushed and quiet. Lights out in the long corridor with pools of deeper dark marking the abutting classrooms and gym area. Such a huge space, filled with plenty of nooks and crannies for Marjolie to sneak off with her boyfriend, Dommy J. Not to mention shadowy corners perfect for drug exchanges, fake ID sales, and... I have that tremor again. I don't know what's wrong with me. Starting my day with a handsome man who asks too many personal questions, visiting a crime scene, I'm a mess of nerves. I don't like this building anymore. In its own way, it's also a crime scene.
where Angelique stood up to a bully with the help of her new friend, where Livia Somdy thought her life was finally looking up, where some summer programming happened to be going on in the background, but that had nothing on the real drama taking place among the teen participants. If these walls could talk. I find my way to Frederick's office on my first try. In my jumpy state, I'm walking softly, as if I don't want the ghosts of teenagers past to find me. As a result, when I rap lightly on the partially opened door, Frederick startles, knocks a pile of papers off his desk, and whacks his computer monitor. Sorry, not the most auspicious start to a conversation.
How did you get in here?
He asks sharply. The back door was open. He seems to collect himself.
I try to keep it locked when I'm alone in the building.
So I'm not the only one spooked by all this empty, lurking space. I just had a few more questions, I start. Frederick nods, bending down to collect his fallen papers.
You are looking for Angelique Badeau, he says in his beautiful French-laced English. I remember. Any word from the girl?
No, but after my conversation with you, we were able to connect Angelique with Livia Somdy. They were friends. He nods, straightening his long, lean form, but the statement doesn't seem to mean much to him. Livia Somdy also disappeared 8 months ago. This morning, the police found her body in Franklin Park. Now, Frederick swallows hard. It's difficult to read his face. Stoic. Resigned. As a man who works with at-risk kids in an inner-city neighborhood, he's probably had this conversation before. Does it make it easier to take?
I am very sorry,
he says at last. Then, more tentatively.
Overdose?
She was murdered. I deliver the words bluntly and am rewarded by a ripple of emotion across his smooth, dark features. Then he subsides once more to stoic acceptance.
You believe Livia's death and Angelique's disappearance are related? That is why you have returned?
Yes.
Why?
They met here, became friends here, during the summer program. Frederick offers a shrug.
Are you sure they met here? Many of our kids already know each other. This neighborhood isn't that big.
They met here. What can you tell me about Dommy J? The abrupt change in topic catches him off guard the second time. His face goes flat, instinctive defense mechanism, as in he knows plenty about Dommy J and is already mentally sorting out what he should and should not reveal. Question is, because he needs to protect himself and the program, or because he's afraid of Dommy J?
What do you want to know?
He asks at last. Excellent strategy. When in doubt, answer a question with a question. I hear he deals in fake licenses.
The subject came to our attention,
Frederick allows at last, steepling his fingers in front of him.
There was an incident toward the end of the program. Angelique was involved. She was angry with Dommy J for selling an ID to her friend. But not that he shouldn't have coerced her friend into doing something illegal. Rather, the quality of the forgery was so poor, he should be ashamed of himself. She claimed he owed her friend a refund. Naturally, Dommy disagreed. I walked out in time to break up the altercation and order the three teens to my office. Upon further questioning, however, all parties involved denied there was a problem. You know how it is. My staff and I kept an eye out, but we never saw any more signs of trouble. Then the program was over, and the kids moved on.
Do a lot of your charges buy fake IDs?
I have no idea.
Come on. You work with teenagers. Surely you must have some sense of the demand.
Not really. The amount of illegal goods and services these kids can already get on any street corner, from drugs to guns to phones. This whole area is a black market economy. You don't need valid ID for those kinds of transactions.
He raises a good point. Marjolie had wanted her ID to keep up with her club-hopping boyfriend. So there were some things the local dealer couldn't supply, but apparently not much. What would have happened if you'd caught Dommy J selling fake IDs?
We would have kicked him out of the program. Zero tolerance policy, remember?
Like you did with Livia Somdi's older brother?
JJ Somdi?
Yes, there were issues. He was banned from the rec center after a volunteer caught him selling drugs. The police were informed, though I don't know what became of the matter.
We do not hold the sins of the brother against the sister, however. Livia Somdi remained welcome.
Very enlightened of you. Frederick simply waits. Did you ever interact with JJ?
Yes, as part of the after-school programming. We open up the courts for basketball, other sports, while offering mentoring opportunities, tutoring instructors, and special classes in art, video design, computer programming. Our mission is to keep these kids off the street. We must help them make good decisions as they are growing up surrounded by bad ones.
I have a friend who says he helps out with the mentoring. Charlie.
Ah, yes, Charlie. The kids, particularly the boys, like him very much. He is one of them, a survivor. When he talks, even our tougher teens will listen. And every now